one of the phrases we chanted just now. Keeping focused on the body in and of itself, ardent, alert, mindful. Putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. This is a formula for how you get into concentration. And lying behind it is a very important quality for succeeding in concentration, and that's intent. You want to be totally intent on what you're doing right now. Let the past and the future fall away. They don't have to be involved right now. This means you can unburden yourself of a lot of thoughts, a lot of concerns. At this moment, the only thing that matters is the awareness right here in the present moment and your breath. And whatever thoughts help you stay with the breath. Thinking is a part of meditation, is a part of concentration. But it's focused thinking. We're not just randomly wandering around surveying things. We're thinking about what we're doing. That's a quality of intentness as well. Because if you don't think about it, it's hit or miss. Sometimes the mind settles down, sometimes it doesn't settle down. But you have to learn how to observe it if you really want to develop this into a skill that you can tap into whenever you need it. The Buddha didn't teach hothouse meditation, in other words, the kind of meditation that survives only in intensive retreats. There's a passage where Mahanama comes to see him and says, "What should I do? I'm surrounded by my family, my children. I've got my work." And the Buddha says, "You can still meditate." In his case, he was recommending some of the recollections. And you can still get the mind into good concentration that way. But the same principle also applies to the breath. After all, the breath is always there. It requires that you be very observant and very sensitive to what's going on. But otherwise, it's with you all the time. And so you want to get to think about it and your relationship to the breath. In the beginning, it's pretty simple. The only thing you've got to do is get the mind to settle down and put aside all your greed and distress with reference to the world, all your concerns about where things are going in your life, where things are going with the world as a whole. You've got to take care of your mind, because nobody else can take care of it for you. And if you really want to understand it, you have to watch it very carefully, because it has its tricks. There are large parts of the mind that don't want you to see them. There are areas that, in each case, we've all blocked off. And if we're really going to understand the mind, we have to see through that blockage. After do that, it requires that you have a sense, one, of a place where you can settle down and not feel threatened by what's behind the block. And two, you have to be not threatening to what's behind the block. In other words, you have to show some sensitivity, some gentleness, as you start probing around in the body. But you have to be determined. You realize it may take time, but and you're willing to back off when you have to. But your backing off is strategic. You're waiting for a time when things will begin to open up. And part of that does come from your being very consistent and very gentle with the parts of the body that you are aware of and the parts of the mind you are aware of. Your parts of awareness. So that the other parts of the mind begin to sense, okay, maybe they can trust you. And the areas that have been kept blocked off begin to open up. And then you can really settle into the present moment with a sense of spreading out. This is your territory. Your sense of the body as you feel it from within, your sense of your mind as you feel it from within. Nobody else can move in here. They can do things to your body. They can show you things that can get your mind upset. But your experience of these things from within, that's your territory. And you want to arrange it so that it's a good place to stay. Now, you can't be responsible right now for things that are going to come in from your past karma, but you can be responsible for what you're doing right here. This is why when the Buddha teaches about karma, he'll talk about world systems evolving and devolving. And he spreads his net really wide, but then he pulls it back in. The course of the universe, the course of life, it can go over long periods of time, but it all comes down to actions. Now, where are actions happening? They're happening right here. Where do they come from? They come from your intentions. So you're working with the source right here. And the best way to get to know your intentions are to give yourself a firm intention to stay in one place. Try to keep that in mind. And then you'll notice when the other intentions come in that would move you away. Otherwise, you're like a boat floating down the river. A little current picks it up and moves it in one direction. Another current comes and picks it up and moves it in another direction. And if you don't have anything firm to stay with, you have no idea of how the movements are pushing you, where they're pushing you. But if you've got something firm, you tie the boat up to a post. And the slightest little change in the current, you'll see how the boat relates to the post, and you notice, okay, something's happened. And as you give the mind this place to stay, not only do you begin to see other intentions, but you begin to see the extent to which your experience of the present moment is put together out of intentions. Even though we talk about concentration as being a place where you can settle in, it's a house that you're constantly repairing, maintaining. It's a construction site. You want to make it good enough so you can have some shelter, but you have to keep realizing that you're constantly putting it together because things are constantly falling apart. Each present moment passes, passes, passes. And so you've got to prepare for the next moment and then the next. And where does the next moment come from? Well, part of it comes from your past karma. But an important part comes from what you're doing right now. This is where you want to focus here. In fact, according to Dependent Core Rising, what you're doing right now, your intentions right now, are something you sense prior to the input from the senses. That means you're priming yourself. So you want to look into the mind to see the nature of its priming, where it's pushing you. And the good news here, of course, is that if you push yourself in the right direction or acting in the right direction in the present moment, then when things come in from the past, you don't have to suffer from them. You can develop the skills to handle them. The Buddha compares this to being a wealthy person. If a wealthy person steals a goat, the wealthy person is fined. The fine isn't much. It's only a minor part of the wealthy person's general store of wealth. If you're poor and penniless, okay, they fine you for stealing a goat and you're going to suffer a lot. So the skills that you develop here in the present moment, these are a form of wealth. The Buddha mentions four altogether. Actually, five. The first is training the mind so it's not overcome by pain. And we do this by getting the mind in concentration. And we work with the breath. Notice the areas of the body that are in pain or tense, tight. We can work with those. And as you work with the more minor pains in the body, you begin to gain a sense that you've got some skills you can use to work on the bigger pains. This gives you a sense of confidence as you approach pain. And you can develop the right attitude toward it. As the Buddha said, pain is something you want to comprehend. Particularly here, he's talking about pain in the mind. But one of the ways you comprehend pain in the mind is to see how it relates to pain in the body. And when you work with the breath and have a part of the body, at least, that feels really good, it gives you the confidence you need in order to look at pain, not get so worked up about it. Realize pain is a normal thing. we have these bodies. They're subject to pain. And when you're probing and analyzing the pain, you're not any longer the victim of the pain. In fact, as you're moving around, looking at the pain from different angles, asking different questions, you're more of a moving target. And so finally you get, so the pain is not overwhelming. That's a good skill to have. The second skill the Buddha lists is that you don't want to be overcome by pleasure. Now, a lot of us think that'd be really cool, have enough pleasure that we'd be overwhelmed by it. But it's dangerous. If you allow yourself to be overwhelmed by pleasure, you're setting yourself to be overwhelmed by pain. Because the same attitude applies in both cases. So here again, the concentration helps you. If you're going to stay with the breath, stay focused on the breath, you have to learn how to stay with the breath, even though pleasure is coming up in different parts of the body. A sense of ease comes into the mind as you realize you can stay here and don't have to keep moving around. And there'll be a part of the mind that says, well, if I don't wallow in the pleasure or gobble it down, then it's going to leave me and I won't get the benefits I could have had from it otherwise. And one of the first lessons you've got to learn, of course, is you can't just gobble down the good feelings that come with meditation. They're there. They'll do their work without your gobbling them down. You don't have to gather them up. And in fact, if you allow them to be there without gobbling them down, stay with the breath, you're creating the causes for continued pleasure. This way you can be with pleasure and yet not be overwhelmed by it. Two of the other skills the Buddha says are necessary in the present moment are one, virtue, and two, discernment. Virtue is a matter of restraint. You know there are certain things you could do, but they're going to be harmful. And you can say no. And this element of restraint moves from external things into how you approach your senses. There are certain ways you can look at things and listen to things that would give rise to lust or greed or anger. You ask yourself, why bother? Your ability to look in other ways. As John Lee says, be a person with two eyes. This relates to the quality of circumspection. If you look with only one eye, you see only one side of things. He says, look at both sides. If there's something you like, look at the side that's not so good. If there's something you don't like, look at the side that is good. This relates to another quality, which you're trying to develop, which is discernment. You use your discernment to say no to yourself, the unskillful things, in a way that's effective. You're not driving them underground. It's because you can say no because you understand them. And that kind of no is the most effective. Then in addition to these four skills, the Buddha also says, develop an unlimited mind. This has to do with your practice of the Brahma-Viharas. And it starts with the breath. As John Lee says, if you don't have a sense of well-being inside and you spread goodwill, it's like opening a water faucet where there's no water, just air comes out. And even though the flow of air may be cool in some ways, it's certainly not as cooling as water. It's not as nourishing as refreshing. So you're working with the breath here. Gives you a sense of well-being, and that's a lot easier than to wish well for others. And then ask yourself, is there anybody out there that it would be worthwhile having ill will for? It certainly doesn't do anything for you. And you realize that goodwill means not just may everybody be happy as they are. You realize that for other people to be happy, they're going to have to become skillful in their behavior. And that's something you can wish for anybody, no matter how bad they've been in the past. Which means goodwill can be universal, it can be unlimited. The same with compassion, the same with empathetic joy. As for equanimity, that's slightly different. But again, that's something you want to develop so that you can tap into it when you need it. equanimity is not in and of itself a good thing. The Buddha says there are cases when equanimity can be unskillful. You get lazy and say, well, this doesn't matter, that doesn't matter, why bother? And that's not the kind of equanimity the Buddha was recommending. He's recommending the equanimity of a person who realizes there are things that need to be done. And I have this much energy and this much ability. What is the best place to invest that energy and ability? As for other things that would pull me away from that, I've got to be equanimous about them. You're learning to be a good investor of your time. And then you realize there are some things you simply can't do anything about, no matter how much you'd like. And this sometimes has to do with things coming in from past karma that just are just going to barge right in. Well, you learn how to be equanimous about them. You suffer a lot less. So these are some of the skills the Buddha recommends for mastering karma in the present moment. So as your intent here on getting the mind to settle down, it's not just being still and senselessness in Thailand, they say, like a log or a stump. You're settling down, and then you want to understand what's happening. You want to understand what you're doing. So you can develop some skills here in the present moment, this construction site we have. You learn how to build things well, so that even when the raw materials are kind of crooked, you learn how to make compensations. Since you don't have to suffer from the crookedness of the materials. You can keep building maintaining a good house for the mind. It requires that you pay a lot of attention. This is what the quality of intentness is for. This is one thing to hear about these different ideas, but something else entirely to actually see how they can apply right here, right now. That requires that you look carefully. You keep them in mind, but you've got to do your own looking. The more intent you are, the more consistent you are in being intent, the more you're going to see. And the more you see, the more you can do.